General Craig McKinley, the chief of the National Guard Bureau, says the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have paid what he calls a war dividend for both the Army and the Air Guard. Their soldiers and airmen, he says, have gotten valuable combat experience, the services have been well-resourced, and they've been tightly integrated into the fabric of the broader Army and Air Force branches they've been serving in. Now, he says, he's pushing inside the Pentagon to make sure the Guard stays operationally relevant when the wars end, and he's also making the case that the Guard is a good value proposition, while the Pentagon is looking to save money.
Capitalizing on the investment made in the National Guard, this organization can arise as one of the best options available as our nation strives to concurrently preserve military capability while decreasing overall defense expenditures. An as-needed force, nearly 85% of the National Guard is part-time. National Guard members cost approximately one-third that of their active duty counterparts, especially when we're not mobilized. National Guard appropriations account for less than 7% of DoD appropriations. National Guardsmen and women serve longer and retire later than their active duty counterparts, and that retirement costs one-tenth of the active duty.
But McKinley says that message isn't sinking in with everyone in the Pentagon. He says some of the people involved in budget deliberations see the Guard as costly. His counterargument is that that's only because the Guard has been mobilized to such a large degree.
What we're facing, I think, in the building is people saying, well, you know, these last 10 years when we mobilized 60,000 soldiers, this is a very expensive force. That's looking at a small snapshot in time. I would like cradle to grave, day from enlistment till the day we retire, then our retirement fees to be looked at, and I don't think we've ever done that. And so I'm encouraging the department and others to say, let's once and for all put the numbers on the table, let's verify, and let's make sure that when we say a member of the Guard costs 25 or 30% over the lifetime of that member, that we're really talking apples to apples, and not just during this very intense period of combat that we've been through these last 10 years.
McKinley spoke Friday on a panel with the chiefs of the Army and Air National Guard at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. He says he's also arguing that DoD has invested so much in the Guard and Reserve components to get them up to par with the active components that it would be foolish to let that capability deteriorate now.
We are an integrated force. This National Guard that's almost a half a million people out there has been brought in, and we are tightly wound with our services. Therefore, we need to be used. And that's our argument here. Keep us operational. Keep us balanced. Don't take the Guard, in our case, down to a point where we're unusable again. Secretary Panetta gets it, and Marty Dempsey gets it, and so do the other service chiefs. There's got to be a sweet spot here. There's got to be a balance. Why would we squander this investment that 10 years of integration has brought us to? I think that's the debate. Hopefully, as we go through the budget lay down in February, we'll find that this has resonated.
But to make sure the Guard does get used on a regular basis going forward, McKinley says, will also require a reexamination of some of the peacetime missions it performs. And Lieutenant General Harry Wyatt, the director of the Air National Guard, says there are some policy changes that could be made to make sure the Guard soldiers and airmen are more available to commanders when they're needed.
We have a lot of policies that were in place during the Cold War and have not migrated or changed to the point that allows easy access to the Guard and Reserve. The example that I can think of is Haiti, where there was a feeling in the building that we have to give guardsmen and reservists 30 days notice to respond to an event like Haiti. And we're kind of shaking our heads. We do this on a moment's notice inside the United States, and we had guard units ready to go on a moment's notice to help Haiti. But because of self-imposed policy, we were prevented from getting into the fight early. So we've got to take a look at policies.
Another relic of the Cold War, according to McKinley, is the mission set that's given to the Guard. He says he wants a reexamination of the functions the Guard is used for.
And I would say both the Air Force and the Army understand we have capabilities, we have civilian acquired skills in all of our nation's National Guard that could be used in cyber, for example. Rather than go out and create little niche missions, which is kind of where we are today, I want to work with General Alexander and contribute Army Guardsmen and Air Guardsmen to his force so that we can utilize the most competent, the most skilled people we can out in the field. That's our next step, and General Alexander and I have got great communication lines open, and we need to do that. But everybody needs to participate in this. we don't need to have a cyber Pearl Harbor to discover that we need to prepare and plan for this.
Wyatt says if the military were a stock market, he'd be buying shares in remotely piloted aircraft and in cyber. The Guard is already playing a role in both areas, but he thinks cyber in particular is a field where the Guard can offer value. He says the military and its cyber command simply can't compete from a salary standpoint with what the private sector is paying to train and retain cyber experts.
And so rather than lose them forever to the military, we think the niche for the Air National Guard is to provide units in those locales where they will probably work in their civilian life using those same skills. Let them make the high dollars in the civilian workforce, but on drill weekend, 2 weeks in the summer, maybe even whenever they want to, come to work for the Air National Guard and be challenged in some areas that you won't be challenged with in your civilian community. We've already seen that. We've got a cyber warrior in Washington State that on drill weekend, on his own dime, flies to the East Coast to Fort Meade to do battle with folks worldwide. And that's what we think we can offer. We can capture some of that talent that's trained in the Air Force and not let it separate, but rather transition to further service to the country.
Wyatt says the Air National Guard is trying to funnel more private sector cyber expertise into the military. Guard units in several states have set up cyber centers of excellence around major technology corridors.
So what we're doing is, in those areas like Delaware, like Washington State, like Silicon Valley, like Austin, Texas, and we are standing up cyber forces in the states in those particular areas, working with 24th Air Force for presentation of the forces to General Alexander.
General Keith Alexander, the commander of U.S. Cyber Command. McKinley says it's far too early to tell how the National Guard will fare out of the Pentagon's comprehensive budget review, especially with the added murkiness that comes from the unfinished business of the Congressional Supercommittee. But he says unlike in past eras, the Guard is part of the deliberations, and he says his arguments are being heard inside the Pentagon.
Our case is to present the National Guard force presentation to be considered as a force to rely on, as a force that is competent and capable, and that if integrated properly can be a significant advantage during a fiscal constrained environment. Those are the themes that we're following.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.